G'day and welcome to the Frontrunners. I'm XCute. Today I'm joined by Space Tomato, and our special guest is Level Cap. How are you doing, guys?
Hello, thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing well.
So we're just going to be having a casual conversation with Level Cap. If you've seen this before, you can like this content, subscribe, all that type of thing. But other than that, we're just going to be having a casual conversation, kicking back and talking about Star Citizen and a few other things. So I'm going to be awkward and I'm going to get it right out of the way from the get-go. This is the last thing I built out of Lego. Do you know what this is?
Yeah, yep. Man. Classic space. It's awesome, dude. I love that set.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Lego, and I thought I'd share that and just get the awkwardness out of the way first. I've got rockets out there, Ghostbusters cars, Batman's cars, the works. So how did you get into
Lego?
Nice,
man.
Which, do you have a lot of it like that? And I know you do it with your brother, too, if I'm not mistaken, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to bet my collection would impress you. I mean, like everybody, right? You get in when you're a kid, and then you have what they call your dark ages in the Lego community, which is when either your finances or your life doesn't line up with being a Lego fan because it's very expensive and time consuming. And then I just found a pocket where I got back into it, and my brother and I started a YouTube channel together about Lego, and that really got us into it, like, much more hardcore than I was to begin with. I design custom stuff. We both design custom stuff. We work with these awesome designers around the world, and we run a web store, brickvault.toys, where you can buy custom instructions for things, and, it's been fun, man. It's a great... Sometimes when I got, like... Basically, if I finish up my normal gaming YouTube work for the day, I'm heading upstairs and I'm going to be working on a build or something. And it's a good way to chill and just sort of let the brain cool down a little bit.
You know, I use it to zen out. Now, I don't know about space. Space, if you had to think of it, what ship would you like to see Level Cap custom build from Star Citizen and Lego?
An Endeavor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, make it difficult.
I've got a Javelin.
Oh, nice.
I've got a Javelin that I was building for the competition.
How did that go?
That happened. Well, so I was almost done with it, and I kept rereading the rule set, and it said that they were going to try and build the winning thing, and I was like, they'll never be able to build this. It's huge. It's massive. So I just decided not to submit it, and then, like, one of the devs afterwards was like, oh, well, that's like, yeah, we're going to pick a bunch of winners. And so basically I didn't submit it, but I've got like a tweet somewhere showing
some of my
furthest progress on it.
Put it in next
year. I would
love
to see them try to build it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'll totally bank it and use it for next year. It's pretty cool. I think you guys would like it.
That Endeavor one is a good one, though. I do like that. But the other one I'd probably
be
chuck
nice
in there.
Fancy.
Yeah, I'd like a Redeemer just because of the funny wing engines. I think that'd be kind of cool, yeah.
My problem with Legos from the first time I ever got one till the last time I've ever touched one was always that I just lose the pieces constantly. I never could complete a set because I was always losing the pieces. How, with so many pieces and such large sets, how do you like keep track of everything?
I'll say this, fire pits have got nothing on Lego. How does that sound?
I don't know, man. I always just build in like one session, or there'll be like a build area and you just build there, man. But now and then you can't find a part. But I think once you have enough Lego pieces, you can usually source something from your own collection just to finish it.
When I build, I put everything, you know, they come out numbered, so you might get 3 6 bags that come out. I like have 3 glass bowls, and I just put everything in bowls and pull them out of the bowls. That's how I've done it.
I got Lego all around me. That's the Lego Fifth Element taxi behind me. It's a Lego type.
That's Lego. Oh wow, I didn't know the Fifth Element one was Element. I was going to ask about the Fifth
one
Element
over
one.
Here.
Yeah. TIE
the Link is one that I made, and then this glass case over here is my Lego Star Wars minifig collection, which I don't even want to know how much money I've put into it at this point, but there's some figs in there that are like well over $600. Like, I could just sell it on eBay for like $600 now. It's pretty crazy.
That'd be a good little thing for charity if you got like one content creator from Star Citizen, like you, your brother, and some other like good professional Lego builders, and we all, with a content creator each, you kind of have like a team off, and the winning entry goes out to whoever, you know, some kind of donation, like sell it on eBay or something, and give the money to charity. I could see that as a really fun little side project one day, but I don't know. I'm dragging you into things not to commit to, obviously. But
yeah. People love Legos.
Yeah. So no, I
like it.
I brought it up on the.
I was building the javelin on live stream for a couple of live streams leading up to it. People were enjoying it, so it's cool. They didn't realize that you could do a lot of designing digitally on the computer, which is primarily how I do it for big builds.
They've got software for faster. They've got a software for that.
Yeah. And once you learn it, you can do it faster than you could do it.
That is cool. Yeah, see, people like me didn't realize I'm a simple person who builds out of the box and loses pieces. I didn't even realize how much you could get into custom builds and designing your own stuff.
Well, they allow you to order the bricks you want now. I can't remember what it's called, but they've got a thing where you can custom order exactly the bricks you want. So you can build anything you want now, essentially. So, yeah. All right. Well,
yeah, that's cool.
I think we'll talk about Star Citizen for a little bit, and then we'll come back to some other stuff, because obviously I want to talk about your YouTube channel. I want to talk about Battlefield, because I've got a really hard question for you. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer that. I know, because I have a very deep history with Battlefield, and I'm going to test your knowledge with probably the most hardcore question I can think of. And if you can answer it, I'll be very impressed, because I've never met a content creator that can actually answer it. So that's a challenging one.
The hardest of Battlefield questions.
I think it is the hardest. And the developers, there are developers I've asked, and they can answer it. So it's pretty hard.
He's going to be like,
I'm
what's
not
the best
super
gun
confident
in the game?
Because if it's like some weird, like specific weapon.
Okay, no.
Yeah, I forget details.
How about I ask it now then, right? What is the game? Okay. That predated Battlefield 1942. What was the game that is not called Battlefield, but it is Battlefield in name? Do you know the name of it?
Trying to remember.
I'll give you a clue.
I know the game. I know the visuals because it had the airships. Okay, what's the clue?
I'll just give you the first name. Code name.
Oh, is it code name Eagle?
Codename Eagle. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, that's what they're developing their engine on. That's what they developed their engine on. I believe Lars worked on that game.
Yep, and then I
talked to him a bit about it. And BF1 was kind of like drawing some inspiration from that, because it was sort of like, I can't remember if it was like an alternate history World War One or sort of something like that, you know?
That's a little weird, because they had air blimps that could pick up tanks and some weird things like that. But literally when 1942 came out, back then I was doing some study to do game development. And our teacher at the time realized it was in the bargain bin. And basically picked it up and we installed it, because it was only like $5 because it was in the bargain bin. And so we were playing it during lunch times between, you know, making games. So it was really interesting. And that's how I remember it from back in the day.
I missed lunchtime LAN parties. We had it at my high school where we turned the media room into one of those, and we were playing like Tribes and like Quake 2 and just like having a blast, man.
GoldenEye and Mario Kart on the TV in the lunchroom.
Yeah. There's always a GoldenEye tournament somewhere where somebody starts talking trash and they're like, I'm the best GoldenEye player ever. And then all of a sudden this ancient Nintendo console shows up and people start playing GoldenEye.
And then someone gets the comments about you only play Odd Job though, so it doesn't count. Like, and only people that play that game will know what I'm talking about. But we'll come back to Battlefield then. So with Star Citizen specifically then, what was your draw card to it? And I think you got into it fairly early on, because I've watched a few of your videos. I try to watch a lot of your Star Citizen stuff. And just for future reference, I do catch a few of your This Week in Gaming videos. They come up in my feed from time to time. Cool. So I've watched you for quite a while, just so we're on the same page. And obviously I've got a history of Battlefield like yourself. But what first drew you to Star Citizen, and what keeps you around?
Yeah, well, I mean, lifelong sci-fi fan, right? Like, love Star Wars, love Star Trek, love everything in between and around those genres. Basically, I saw the Kickstarter when it was coming out. I was very aware of it, but I regrettably was not a Kickstarter pledge person back in the day. I was sort of like, we'll wait and see what happens, because that was the era of lots of Kickstarter projects trying to like launch and most of them failing. So I was like, okay, I mean, it looks awesome. I'll follow it, you know? And basically my brother and I were very interested in the game. And so we kept talking about it, and it always helps to have somebody who's like as excited by the prospect of the project as you are, and then you just start chatting about it and getting hyped up about it. And just watching its progress over the years was really impressive. And I would drop in for the different modules as they came out and mess around, check out your ship in the hangar module when that first came out, check out the original like flying tutorial stuff, arena command, you know, as it all started dropping. But at those points, it wasn't really a game. You know, it wasn't really anything you could like build YouTube content around for any sort of longevity. So I drop a video here and there and be like, hey, look, here's the cool thing that Star Citizen's done this year, you know, and that would be it, right, for like a year, because they really weren't doing anything that I could show off in a gaming sense other than just talking about it. And as a YouTuber in the general space, you can't really hype up a project that hasn't proven itself too much, or you just get way too much backlash, you know. And just about every one of my early Star Citizen videos was, you know, like, oh, vaporware, it's fake, it'll never succeed. So I kind of limited how much I integrated it to my actual channel. But my brother was way closer to the development of the project for like the first 7 years, I guess, than I was. So I would always just ping him and be like, anything cool happening with Star Citizen? And then he'd talk my ear off for like 3 hours.
Sounds like we've got the wrong stuff. Sounds like we've got the wrong brother on. I just curious. But yeah, might have to get him on one side.
Yeah. Well, now I'm more into it than him. I think he kind of burned himself out after a while. And I'm like, hey, you should get on Star Citizen, man. Like, I remember
he's like, oh, that's scam.
Yeah. Well, I bought him a whole C for a birthday like forever ago when it was a concept ship, and the ship's almost out, so I'm like, you better get online.
All right, well, if he needs motivation, we'll call him out. We'll find out who his favorite contact creators are for Star Citizen, and we'll just put it right in front of his face. Hey, your brother said you've got to get on. Yeah, that'd be funny. Yes, so Space, have you got any things in particular that you want to ask in relation to his history with the game?
Let's see. You were talking about how you weren't really watching it too much over the course of those 7 years. Kind of curious. I mean, obviously you are paying a lot more attention to gaming news, but I'm always curious how things look from outside the community. Do you remember what kind of things would pop up that you would hear about Star Citizen during that time? Would it mostly be just like the same, oh, reached this funding milestone, been this many years, still not really there? Or were you actually getting any details of features and things that were going into the game at that time?
I mean, I was probably closer to it than I think somebody who is just reading headlines on articles. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember seeing all the funding milestones being hit, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to add this to the game. They're going to do planets. All of that was very exciting and very hype inducing and all that. I didn't miss any of the Citizen Cons, you know, I saw all of those.
Okay. So
I was probably a bit closer than I'm like communicating, you know, because I mean, from my perspective, I always knew somebody who was way more obsessed with the project than me. So I'd be like, aren't they going to add something like this? And they'd be like, yeah, they talked about it in like a video 2 years ago or something like that.
So
there's so many levels to your knowledge game with Star Citizen. So yeah. Like, I don't know if it's a 1 to 10, 10 being like, I know everything there is to know about Star
it's
Citizen.
Impossible.
I'm probably like, it's five. I don't know. I really don't know.
There's too much now. It's something I commonly talk about is there is, you've got 10 years of it or more now, and it is literally impossible to retain everything, to the point that like just even our grid or Space will have a confliction between the things we say, and it's like, stuff it, let's just go check it, because it's just there's too much now. And I'll have a fan reach out and say, hey, you got this wrong, and I'm like, cool, I'll correct it, because it's just there's too much.
And that's actually
how I found Space Tomato's channel, because you were doing deep dives on specific subjects. Because I was like, I just want to know everything there is to know that they've ever said about base building, right? Like, and you would put all that info together, because otherwise it's all over the place, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're like, okay, well, they've talked about it in bits and pieces over the last 10 years, right? So you're just like, how do I put that together?
Given the history, the context to those different things they're working on, I think makes them a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Space
makes
is very
make more sense.
Space is very good at consolidating information into a very concise, good video.
If I can find it.
Yeah.
Just all over the place.
That's just it, finding it. Because I get, man, I remember images in my head of things, and then actually trying to go find them can take hours. I remember trying to find one recently of an old 890 jump concept, right? Because just to bring up speed real quick, the Banu Merchant Man, you know, it's got the shops in it. There was a version of the 890 jump with shops in it. Way, 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 way back when it was concepted. And we actually believe what's happened is that has spun off into another variant, now another ship, and that's what the Banner Merchantman's become, because they're roughly the same size and they roughly do very similar things, except one is now like a luxury, you know, ship with a meeting room in it and the kitchens and the and all that stuff. The other one's the cargo ship with the they essentially are very, like, when you put them next to each other, they're incredibly similar. That's what we believe's happened. And so as that's gone up and become, because of the name Merchantman, become that ship, they built a ship behind it as well to take over the old clipper ship role, which is the Raelian. So they've even moved things around, basically. So, but that's all just a theory based on old concepts. But it makes a lot of sense. But anyway.
The Banu Merchantman is going to be interesting. I don't believe that it's going to come into the game and actually have any of its main gameplay. I think it's just going to be a glorified cargo ship. I'd love to be proven wrong.
You should have got that for your brother, by the way. That's what you should have got him.
Yeah, I can't remember what that concept sale was, but I'm sure it was. Oh, he has a merchantman, actually. You know what? He has one. That's his, like, prized. Cultured. He's the Gib merchantman guy. You know,
right.
For years, I think he bought it in concept sale. So,
wow,
I bought the Carrick in concept sale and just sat with that in my little JPEG for years and years and years. Right. So I know the pain.
You both got to deal with ships with drastic changes.
Mm. Yeah, and just like dreaming about it forever, and then so much time going by that you almost forget that you even have it.
Merchantman.
And you're like, oh, wait, they're launching the Carrick finally? Oh, cool. I can finally fly that ship, you know?
You happy with how it turned out?
Yeah. The Carrick's one of my favorite ships in the game. I mean, I get nitpicky about stuff. I don't like wasted space. And I'm like, oh, man, there's two hallways next to the ship hangar, right? I'm like, just give me one hallway and give me a bigger ship hangar. Like, that kind of stuff annoys me, because you can almost fit, like, all these other ships into the Carrick, but really you can only fit these tiny little ships into it.
But so symmetry. Like,
oh, yeah, I know. It's like, who needs two freaking hallways on the side of a hangar? In fact, you don't even need either hallway, because it's all connected underneath the hangar. Like, there's a lot of wasted space. So stuff like that irks me a bit.
Because
I'm like, you could have a bigger hangar, no problem. Like, but whatever, you know, it's like, it's still a fantastic ship for just bombing around with friends and stuff.
Yeah, functionality wise, that thing is king.
You're going to want to stay away from the hammerhead then. That ship sounds like your nightmare.
Oh, yeah, I have one. Yeah, I got a hammerhead, man.
You upgrade it to a Polaris for $25. Do yourself a favor. What's the loner? The loner is the hammerhead, believe it or not.
There you go.
So one of the things we do here, we give a lot of generalistic financial advice and stuff like that on how to maximize your ships for the dollar value. So to give an example, the same ship at the same price point as the Polaris is the A2. Now, the A2 in-game only costs 5.5 mil, yet I can pick a myriad of ships that cost heaps less that actually cost more in-game. Now, they will obviously change as the game comes along, but it's at least it shows you the difference between the designer's thoughts process and the marketing's thought process. There is a very big drastic change. And there are a lot of ships that are not worth their dollar value, so to speak. So they're overselling them because of the rule of cool and stuff like that. So when we talk about ships like the Endeavor that Space brought up, that's one of the last old ships left that are actually really worth the money, because you know how big that's going to become. Have you heard about that? How it's an older design ship and it's going to grow? So it's only $350, but it's probably going to be work out to be at least a 750, if not more, ship. So much like the Banner Merchantman that's increased, that's probably one of the last ones that'll do that. So
I'm sitting on my what's the base building ship?
The Pioneer.
Yeah, I've been sitting on that one forever. So I'm like, that one day it's going to be the coolest ship ever. But we'll see.
Did you get that at concept?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a rare ship these days. Very, very rare to see the Pioneer with LTI.
Nobody wants to wait for that.
That's my most expensive ship purchase that I've made.
Well, if you want to get more expensive ones, believe it or not, I can tell you I can tell you how to get a Kraken. I can show you how to get a Kraken cheaper than a Pioneer. Not spending more money.
Not at all. Not absolutely.
I'm going to hold off for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I upgraded a Cutlass Black. I don't even know. I think it was a referral or something. I upgraded it to the Spirit recently. It was $10. And even that, I was just like, oh, God, I don't want to put money into this anymore.
I don't want the Spirit. You know, I feel like I'm the only guy who's like, I don't care about the Spirit. Looking at the ship, because the thing is I love the Cutlass, right? Mm-hmm. The Cutlass is one of my favorite ships because it's so damn functional.
Yep.
And can like do so many things and it looks fun and whatever. And then even the Freelancer, I'll give a pass, right? Because it's actually a functional ship. And then I see the Spirit. I'm like, okay, it can't fit a bigger mining vehicle in the back. The turret seems like it's rear facing. I hate rear facing turrets.
Yeah.
And then it's this giant, giant looking thing. It reminds me, it's the Mercury Star Runner. And you just blow the wings off of that thing because it's this giant target with lots of wasted space. So I'm looking at it from a practicality standpoint. I'm like, I don't know. The Spirit just doesn't fit my bill. Also, they're marketing it as a bombing thing, and we still have no gameplay loop for bombing at all.
You're not getting it.
None on the roadmap.
You're not getting it. You got to be able to blow the wings off because it's not crucial. If I blow a wing off on the Cutlass, you're losing a thruster. But if you blow it off on the Spirit, you're just like, well, you cut my Dorito in half. I'm still good. I'm good to go. Yeah, I can fly.
You're probably only affected in atmosphere. Space, I was going to say, what he was saying there about how he doesn't like the Crusader ships, I was thinking of that line you always say, there's got to be things in the game that you hate for this game to be successful. And I hear that all the time.
I didn't say Crusader ships. I like Crusader ships. I just didn't like the Spirit, right? I love the Ion and the Inferno, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I love the ideas of those ships. They fly like garbage, but the concept is great. You know, one day they'll be cool.
You won't.
I think from...
I was going to say, you're not going to want for naught anyway, because you've actually got a referral Javelin, yeah? So you've already got the biggest ship in the game. Yeah. So you don't need to buy any more ships, because you can just use that to earn all the others. So, yeah.
You know, what's funny, though, is I, as excited as I am to see Capital Class stuff, I'm not the kind of guy who wants... I hate organizing shit, right? So I don't want to have to be in charge of 20 people just to fly that thing around. So I'll take the Javelin out from time to time whenever it comes in the game, I would imagine, but you're probably going to see me in a much more practical ship most of the time, you know, just something I can hop into.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't going to cost me an arm and a leg to, keep running and fill up with fuel and all that stuff. And, oh, man.
You haven't done your reading, mate. Once that ship is deployed, you can't land it. It is permanently spawned.
So are you sure about that? I know they've talked about that, but, I feel like they go back and forth on these things a lot.
You can dock it at a station, right? But docking means it's still hanging off the side of the station. So if someone wants to shoot it, they can actually go in and still shoot it. It is 24/7.
You don't think they'll
spawn it? Not from what they've said. So you might want to do some reading on that.
Does that mean an Idris is going to be same boat as that?
Yeah, that would be the same.
It's pretty much
because an Idris can't fit in the supersized hangar. So
yeah, they need to be able to fit into hangars to be despawned. That's it.
Actually, could an Idris fit into the hangar they make for the reclaimers?
I don't think so.
Those are pretty big.
Yeah.
And they did land an Idris at the expo.
Yeah.
What was that?
You're gonna need an org just to defend those ships, you know, because you're gonna have to have some secret place where your org parks those ships, and there's gonna have to be so many people online at all times so they can defend it. It's gonna be a pain in the butt, man.
24/7 job.
People are underestimating how much these big ships they're getting are going to be kind of a drag on the gameplay in addition to just being fun. That's a lot to have to deal with. If you just want to go with your friends and take on a mission, but you've got, I don't know, a Perseus with you, you're going to have to go and make the change out because that's just not going to be fun to go do a simple investigation or raid mission or something.
But you could defend.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, because I used to play EVE Online, and what turned me off of that game ultimately was just the amount of busy work, right? Like, you're like, I want to go do the fun thing, but to do the fun thing, I first have to do 30 minutes to an hour of logistics, and then I have to do this, and then this. And Star Citizen looks like it's going beyond, like, they keep talking about all these features, and I'm like, this is more than EVE. And that's what turned me off of EVE, was just the busy work to get to the fun stuff. Like, I don't mind travel times and a lot of the logistics stuff, because it is cool and it adds value to the universe. But if you go beyond EVE, it's going to be a major fun suck for the game. So I'm curious to see, because when they were talking about refilling life support stuff, like, I hope that's the thing where I can land at a thing and hit the refuel, restock all my life support supplies, as opposed to, hey, go run out to the shop, go buy the life support stuff, go run back into your ship, go put it into, like, that's gonna kill it for me if you got to do that manually. I'm gonna need a button, and I'll pay the extra fee, the service fee, to have it auto restocked for me, you know, or whatever.
That's fair.
They do.
There's
have
a balance they've got to hit. Man.
They do have in space stuff like the Nautilus that can drop up sentries and mines and stuff. So you could technically, like, say, hide a javelin in a nebula and, you know, put turrets and stuff around it. And they're probably going to increase, you know, or an asteroid base in space. Obviously, there are ships, like you said, the Idris and the Kraken and stuff like that can also land next to a base you've built with your Pioneer, and it'll be defended by turrets and stuff like that. But then again, there's that
risk. They need to test this. They need 100%. To test it so soon. This is my, like, because Star Citizen's a game being developed from the bottom up and top down simultaneously. They're like, here's a giant ship. And also, we have no concept for how giant ships are going to function in the universe. And so it's like, if you think about it, especially if you use EVE Online as a blueprint, because so much of what the social space in EVE is going to be mimicked in Star Citizen. A lot, almost all the combat in Star Citizen, when it comes down to things that orgs care about, is going to be territory disputes, right? So you're going to be attacking bases for the most part, or a fleet that's intercepting you before you get to a base. And we still have no concept for what a base assault looks like on any level.
Oh my
nor
gosh,
will we
that's so far away.
For like forever. And so all the ships in combat are supposed to like fit these roles, but we still have no, we're not even close to being able to establish a skirmish that even represents what the end game should be, right?
The amount of, like, balancing that this game is going to, I mean, you got rough. People who are freaking out about the Ares getting like a nerf, or people keep complaining about every ship that comes into the game gets nerfed after a few months. And it's like, do you realize how much is going to happen to these games over these ships over the next four years?
That flight model too, the changing in the speeds thing, the need for multiple speeds.
Right.
I mean, that's like everything's changed, right? As soon as that launches, everything you knew and like we're used to with combat is like that all goes out the window. We're starting over.
And they're going to do that with the armor system too.
So you mentioned skirmishes there. So I want to actually ask a really poignant question from the Battlefield stuff. Do you think that this game has the potential with things like Theaters of War and that, you know, kind of planicide that stuff?
What's Theaters of War?
What's
is that a thing that's happening in Star Citizen, or is that just like
it is kind of words at this point, but do you honestly think that that has the appeal to bring a lot of those Battlefield Call of Duty players over and introduce them to the game of Star Citizen and then maybe bring them into the greater universe, or do you think it's all pie in the sky? Just your two cents, because you know that game a lot better than us.
Sure. As someone who is deeply, deeply, deeply integrated to the FPS space right now, and not just looking at it from like what's fun, but also what companies are doing to get their products in players' hands more, the only way that Theaters of War or like, what's it, Space Marine? What's the FPS module called? Star Marine.
Yeah.
The only way that that's going to have any legs is if it's free-to-play components for the game. They're going to have to make it free-to-play because I hate to say it, but that's the world we live in right now. You got Warzone 2 coming out for free.
So
the value of that is insane. And all the other all the other FPS content is coming out for free. So if you want to capture that player base and bring them into the greater Star Citizen universe, you got to make some free modules. I think Arena Commander should be totally free. I think the Star Marine should be free. And if they ever did Theaters of War, which I think could be amazing if they did it right, because it is like Battlefield on steroids. Like, do you want to play Battlefield and then also go to space like halfway through the round? Yeah,
it's like 2142.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. But it's got to be free, and that's got to be otherwise it's just going to be, because I don't think the core Star Citizen player base is interested enough in those modules to populate them on a regular basis, and those modules aren't going to be cool enough in themselves for another FPS player to be like, sure, I'll drop $45 just to play this one module, even though I'm not interested in the entire rest of the game.
So the it's funny you mentioned that as free to play, because we're actually the running theory that I have with a few of the other people I've talked to is literally that we reckon that that'll come as the multiplayer component for Squadron 42 when that releases. So it'll pull in people with it. Hey, look, we've got this free thing you can play. Oh, by the way, we've also got Squadron 42. Oh, and by the way, we're making a whole MMO first person shooter universe. So that's kind of what we're expecting. They're going to use it as a free to play way to pull people into both games.
It would be cool, and then they could do what all those games do, and I don't mind them stealing the concept for delivering out content, but I mean, just having seasonal stuff where it's like, hop on, play Star Marine, and you unlock cosmetics or whatever that you get in the base game, right, and in Star Marine as well, but like, it sounds like just AAA-ifying Star Citizen, but I think that's what they would have to do make those modules populated.
As a first-person shooter gamer, does it sound appealing to you? Like, so you normally you play a map and it's like, you know, in Battlefield it's collect 3 points or whatever, and at the end of the round it goes, this is the scoreboard, the winner is the person at the top. Or do you think it's more poignant that's like, if you capture this planet, all these other players in this space part of the game, it'll help them out with that. Like, there's real consequences to actually winning. Does that drive you guys as players? Because I know when I play first person shooters, that would drive me a lot more than just, I got the top points.
No, I think, so like the idea of it having some relevance in the Star Citizen universe, I don't think is going to, would matter to FPS players. I think what's going to happen, and I think Battlefield has to make this change soon as well, is they're realizing that the Battle Royale formula has reinvented a new excitement level for FPS shooters. They've created an intensity game mode that's like, just, it blows everything else out of the water in terms of like caring about winning and caring about being on the top with the Battle Royale formula. Then when you come back to like, oh, I'm going to play traditional Call of Duty multiplayer or traditional Battlefield multiplayer, most of the people on the team aren't even paying attention to the scoreboard or who's winning or who's about to win or lose. They're just running around shooting at people, right? And so I think those games are going to have to try and reinvent their formula a little bit. I'm not saying like dismantle the mode, but figure out a way to get players more engaged in the win factor so that they're paying attention to that, so that there can be this new level of intensity of like, oh man, if we capture this point, we'll get enough points to like maybe inch over the scoreboard before the round like ends. And so they're gonna have to start reinventing that a little, and I think if Star Citizen wants to compete in that arena as well, they're gonna have to figure out a way to make the win factor really exciting and really fun, you know. But I do love Theaters of War. When I heard about it, I was like, yeah, sign me up. It all sounds fantastic. Looking at it, it looked like Battlefield. They weren't hiding their inspirations or anything like that. And I played a game called Shattered Horizon, which has now got a spiritual successor called, I forgot what it's called. It's being developed by a Japanese company right now, but it's an astronaut shooter with zero-G combat.
The one that just got delayed again.
Yep.
Yeah, Boundary. That's what it's called. really cool. I love zero-G shooters. It's fun when they're done well. It's cool. Star Citizen can blend the two worlds together. If you could design engaging FPS arenas where you're like, I know they have the zero-G stuff built into Star Marine, you know, which is neat. So like being able to blend those two worlds together more frequently. And then if you have Theaters of War that integrates vehicles with it too, like, I mean, it could be amazing. But
can you imagine?
Is it even happening?
Can you imagine a map where you're on an Idris and you're under attack with another Idris, and the losing Idris starts to plummet into a planet, and so the battle's happening as the ship's like literally breaking apart. You've all got to drop off into pods, and then it goes across the planet and ends up somewhere else as they're all trying to escape or something. Like, you could just
turns into battle royale.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, like the whole, you could actually have different scenarios as you go through the different sections of the map, and then vehicles come into play, and and they're being chased trying to get to the other side of the desert or something so they can get out. You know.
You know, I had this idea, and I understand everybody in the Star Citizen universe is going to, like, shit a brick, you know, hearing about this. But Star Citizen has all these tools to make any game they want within their universe and make it make sense. So before I put any label on this, imagine this scenario where pick some system that hasn't been developed yet or talked about yet, and you go to this system and there's a planet and it's got this crazy ionized charged atmosphere. Ships can't fly down to this planet. Maybe there's a couple pockets or whatever, but the only way to get down is on specialized transports, and they're, I don't know, NPC driven. And once you get down there, you don't get air support, you don't have backup coming to you, and you gotta scavenge around and find cool stuff. And if other people are down there who took the transports, I mean, there's so no scanners, there's no sensor. No, we're not going to label this here.
All right. But I was going to say,
putting an idea.
So you're essentially is like maybe planet zoning different gameplay types. Is that kind of what I'm hearing? Yeah. But...
Yeah.
Maybe we could just call that Planet Rust.
Yeah.
Planet Rust, Planet Tarkov, whatever you want to call it. But so, like, say there's some really rare artifacts, and only you can only get them on this planet, or there's a super rare whatever that occurs only on this planet.
It's a good idea.
And the only way you can get it is to go down there on foot or using ground vehicles, because ships will get zapped by the atmosphere or something and crash, right? So you've got this way that makes sense within the universe. You've got all the tools from Star Citizen to make this work. You could create this environment that is incredibly appealing to the FPS fan who is like, I'm going to play Star Citizen, but I'm just going to take a ship, fly to this system, and do these really fun, like, planetary missions where, like, it's a kill or be killed environment, pure FPS ground-based combat. And, like, they could do it. They don't have to put a label on it, but, I mean, it sounds appealing to me, you know?
It's what they need. Having places where you can't fly, where it's required that somebody goes in and does combat, like you said, or even just box delivery missions, or, like, restricting people from flying would be super helpful. But you're absolutely right in that. I think that's how they need to build the game out. They need to make sure that anybody who likes a certain type of that gameplay can just find that stuff in nonstop supply, so that's all they can do. They can go to a specific place where that's just easy to get access to.
Well, and it's like, imagine that, like, what's the system that's coming after Pyro, allegedly? It's not Nyx. Odin, it's Nyx.
Nyx. Yeah.
Imagine if they just were like, okay, well, Pyro is exciting because it's the lawless system, right? So how are they going to, what's Nyx going to do that's really going to, like, get us all, like, if they use the planet on Nyx and we're like, hey, this is the environment, right? There's, like, this new crazy appeal to it. They could do something new and interesting like that in every system if they wanted to.
Absolutely. Because
they have the tools to create all these weird rules, you know, and, like, different environments that are going to require an entirely different approach to playing. And, like, all of a sudden Star Citizen sort of is like an exploration game. It's sort of a theme park game where you go around and go on these different rides and experience these different things. But if they really just carry on that concept to the max, where every system offers something different, like, that could be super appealing and just really widen the audience that the game appeals to, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I can already see that. Even if you just look at Stanton and Pyro, obviously. But one of the things they didn't talk about at CitizenCon that I was really interested to know about was the pulsar of Pyro. Mm-hmm. You know, that changes it from normal pirate systems already. What effect is that going to have on the gameplay? Like, am I going to have my ship in a shielded facility, or if it hits me while I'm out in my ship, what happens to it? You know, is it totally disabled and someone's got to come out and repair me? Can I repair my, you know, there's so many questions that come up there that they've never talked about. So I'm just kind of
How cool it'd be if you open your star map and you see like a pulse jetting out, and you're like, oh, I need to get behind a planet or something and shield myself from it, right? Yeah. Like, that'd be pretty dope.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like the nuclear blast thing, like, you know, duck and cover, but yeah.
Right.
You did mention before 2042. I did want to go back to that a little bit. My big problem with 2042 was the lack of teamwork this time around. What was the problems you think for 2042, and what lessons do you think from Battlefield Star Citizen could learn?
Yeah, Star Citizen learned from Battlefield. Interesting. Well, I think Star Citizens doesn't have the Battlefield problem, which is 2042 didn't give the devs enough time to finish the game. They shipped an incomplete game. And every time a new patch comes out, everybody's like, wish the game shipped in this condition, you know. they say like the same thing every single time, but it's like, so it was an unfinished game. Also, we know from leaks at this point that their whole specialist system that replaced the traditional class system was based on a botched battle royale game that they were working on, and they're just like, oh shit, let's just push the specialist into the base game because we already did the work. And of course it fucked the whole class system, and now they're finally in season 3 gonna bring it all back around to the classic classes, and it's gonna probably screw up all the balance for the game, and they're gonna have to rebalance it for months and months, you know. So I mean, like, the whole game is a disaster. The only part of the game that wasn't a disaster was the actual marketing, because the concept for it is fantastic.
The marketing was great.
They were telling us they'd learn from their mistakes and all that type of stuff.
And the concept for Portal sounded great. Players get to design their own game modes.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the patch that's dropping tomorrow actually is finally making Portal servers persistent, so you can build a community around custom game modes. But it came a year after the game launched. Yeah, that's the one thing that Portal needed that it had to have to even be successful. We still don't know if it's going to be successful, but to have any chance of being successful, it had to have persistent servers. And it's just coming on the same day that Modern Warfare 2 is launching its single player getting its whole multiplayer thing going. You're like, yeah, the odds of 2042 making a comeback right now are going downhill.
I got to ask a question. I basically installed the demo of 2042, played it for 2 hours, uninstalled it, and canceled my pre-order. Mm-hmm. It is the first Battlefield game in history I have not brought. Is that a very common thing that you hear? Like, I've been playing them since the very beginning, you know, got the veteran tags, all that type of stuff. But are you hearing that from a lot of people that they gave up on 2042, especially the older guys, or no?
It's the least played Battlefield game that I've played. So, you know, Origin lets you track your hours. I've put less hours into 2042 than any prior Battlefield game by like a long shot, you know. Lots of people are saying that. What I'm hearing a lot right now is the game's done a lot of work. The devs really are trying to like leave the community with a good game, you know, before they move on to the next project. And what I'm hearing a lot now is people hopping back on and being like, I stopped playing this the week it launched. It was so bad. I hated everything about it. And now I hopped on and I'm actually having a lot of fun with my friends right now and we're enjoying it. So the game's in a much, much better state. The problem is, as somebody who's interested, who's not only am I intimately familiar with all the previous Battlefield games, but I'll go back and play them. Like, I was playing BF5 the other day because I wanted to test out my new graphics card on it and see if I could play it with the RTX on, you know? And I'm just, you go back and you play the older games, you're like, God damn it, it's better in every single way than 2042. And it's not to say that 2042 isn't fun, it's just when you compare it to the previous games, you're like, God damn it, they had the formula right. Why did they fuck up the formula?
It's so sad. It's like, like back during Battlefield 4, and then they hit Battlefield 1. It was like around that time, I think, specifically Battlefield 4-ish time, that I thought that franchise was going to take over the shooter space. Like, I thought Call of Duty was good and it would always be a great arcade shooter, but Battlefield had what it took to be like an actual war zone where you were going in with teams and taking part in epic battles.
The problem is multifold. They had a big management problem with the company, and that's being completely gutted and changed. And they've got his face from COD in there now, who's running things, right? The guy who invented COD.
Works at the publisher that makes Fallen Order, and it's Respawn Entertainment. They also make Apex Legends and stuff like that.
Right.
He invented too, right? The biggest FPS games of all time. Medal of Honor as well. Vince Zampella.
That's right.
Vince He's Zampella. The one who just carries franchises.
Medal
to
of Honor, Apex Legends, Jedi Fallen Order. Yep. He touches has been fantastic. And so him taking over Battlefield is like, that's great news, but we got to wait till the next title, right, for that to come out. So they've had a management problem over the years, but also the one, as much as I like, haven't been a huge fan of COD just because the gameplay doesn't really appeal to me as much. Like, it's not even a knock against what COD is. It's just not my type of game. What's successful about the franchise is they have a formula for how much they innovate between titles. They don't innovate a lot. And that's good for the COD franchise because they have a huge player base that likes Call of Duty for what Call of Duty is. So if you innovate a little to get people excited, but you make sure you stick to the core principles of the franchise, you keep the old players around, you excite new players, like it works for them. And Battlefield is like, what if we just try and reinvent the wheel every fucking title? And it's, of course, you're going to have massive disasters and then big successes and then weird stuff like Battlefield 1 being the best selling Battlefield game of all time, but having terrible player retention, you know? So you've just got like all this weird shit going on and you're like, can we just stick with the stuff that you've proven to work and just iterate on that and just evolve it little bits and piece by piece? Because people are here for the thing that they like, not to have it totally turned into something else in the next game.
Pretty
right?
straightforward.
I found over the years it's getting less teamwork and more like a regular deathmatch game. I used to love that whole squad mentality. Probably one of my favorite Battlefields was Bad Company 2. And they should make Bad Company 2, in my opinion. I think that's the one they kind of need to make because
they want to make 3 now.
Oh god, man, I've forgotten the names of them. There's been too many. Right, yeah. What you said?
Bad Company 1 was console only. Bad Company 2 was all platforms, and then
it was Bad Company 2. It was the one with the
Bad
hand
Company
grenade.
3
with the,
was just in our
the hand grenade.
Imagination.
Hand grenade with the smiley tag
smiley
on it.
Face.
Yeah, yeah. So and that was a little bit more squad focused, and I think that kind of really nailed that teamwork thing where there'd be like one. The vehicles were really kind of rare. There would be like one tank, and everyone was trying to help push the tank forward, and it just had this real teamwork appeal to it. Now I'm not saying that's exactly what they need to make, but the teamwork thing was something that he just had in leagues over Call of Duty, because Call of Duty is just run around and click heads, right? And that's fine, as you said, for that audience. But I always thought Battlefield was trying to be Call of Duty in a way to steal a bit of its audience, rather than trying to, it's kind of like what Windows did, rather than trying to keep the Windows audience, they were going after the Mac audience or the laptop audience or the Google audience. They weren't staying with what they had and just working with what they had. They wanted more and more of the pie. And I think that might come a little bit from EA being the publisher and a little bit greedy. I don't know if that's where it comes from, but I got a feeling a lot of the problems with DICE's game is retaining that talent so people move on because they're sick of, you know, the EA shit, and EA just constantly trying to change things and innovate because they think they know better than actual game designers. And so a lot of those people, it's like Blizzard. Like, one of the things I've said about Blizzard for years is I had friends that worked at Blizzard. None of them work there anymore. Blizzard is not Blizzard. Like, it's just Blizzard in name only. They've all moved on to bigger and better things because the company culture has changed. Like, do you remember? I remember them used to saying they used to get free food there and they never wanted to go home and all that type of stuff. And when the CEO got knocked out a couple of years ago, they basically gutted all that. So all the company perks disappeared. And so because they were being paid less than most companies and there were no perks, they just left.
Yeah. I think it's from the rumblings that I've heard from various people I know, I think it's probably really frustrating to work in a position where like your title is like lead game designer, but you aren't making any, you can't make any decisions without somebody else signing off on it. And there's always somebody who doesn't really get the idea of the game or the picture, or is like, well, my kid likes Fortnite, so we should put Fortnite stuff in it. You know, it's like,
obviously
that kind of shit happens all the time, right? And so how frustrating would it be if you've been working in the industry forever, you know your craft, you know how to make a good game, and you can't make it because executives are screwing everything up all the time. So I think there's definitely quite a lot of that. They keep shipping the games before they're finished. They just, I really do think Vince Zampella is going to turn things around. It's just unfortunate that it's had, it's happened after the Battlefield community has suffered through Battlefield 5's launch and now Battlefield 2042's launch, like two games back to back that were so undercooked when they pushed him out the door, and just like, I mean,
seriously,
yeah, BF5,
this is a repeat of BF5 in terms of just like not even being close to done with development and launching it for the holiday seasons. And you're just like, why would you do it again? Why are you killing your IP? You know, it's insane.
It didn't make sense to follow up what an absolute trash heap Battlefield 5 was. With, I mean, everybody saw that and then just thought, hey, you know, look at what happened with Battlefield 5. Like, they got the feedback. They understood what happened. Look at how they're marketing Battlefield 2042. They went back with the number. They're tapping into nostalgia. They're throwing in the marketing in the same way they used to. It feels like it's got that feel. And then they release it, and it's just like, this was a year and a half early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Halo Infinite was. They did the same thing with Halo Infinite. They were going back with the regular art style. They were getting a little bit back into the classic story.
I just want my co-op, man.
And then, and then they freaking release it, and it's different, and it's not ready. And I'm so tired of it. I'm so sick of it. Yeah.
You know what it is? We just have to play games that have no corporate oversight. And they'll come out when they're ready.
Which is what I was trying to say about Star Citizen.
Right? Perfectly managed.
Perfectly segued.
In 20 years, we'll have a complete game. That's amazing.
I think there is something to learn from that. So they are two extremes, aren't they? You've got, you know, there are advantages to the publisher model, but they're also disadvantaged, and it goes the other way. Like, because developers are kind of self-managing. What rules do they follow? And I think of Brian Chambers a lot, because Brian Chambers often says, and he's the head of Frankfurt, often says that we're his boss, or we're here, who he has to report to. And you know, the communication and stuff like that. I always kind of agreed with what Brian said, in that we are kind of, they are responsible to us, and I'd like to see more of them getting back to that, you know, talking to us more about where the game is going and stuff like that. But
I really like Brian. I feel like he never says more than he needs to.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything come from Brian Chambers and then like had some sort of feeling about it later. Like he said this, and I feel like I don't see anything happening of it. You know, everything that he usually says to me is something that I'm like, okay, that's tangible.
I don't know about Level Cap, but I think Space is just dazed by his hair, personally. But yeah,
he's got beautiful hair.
I'm not super familiar with him specifically. I'm sure I've seen him. I just don't remember his name.
I think he was a director in Frankfurt.
Yeah, he's basically the head of Frankfurt. But think of a really nice looking Viking that kind of looks like long golden, kind of like Thor, but a bit darker. And you got a rough idea. Okay. Yeah, he's got
that wavy red hair. Is it blonde?
Make sure you have self-conscious as a man that he has the hair that nice. It's just not bad.
Oh my god, dude! I went to Sweden, Stockholm for some like Battlefield stuff, and like I spent a good week there. And you're just walking around, and there's all these very tall, just very attractive people everywhere. And just like after a week, I'm like, I gotta get the hell out of here, man. I feel like a dwarf among these like gods and goddesses, like everywhere, and everybody just looks great all the time, and they're just used to it. And
maybe
like,
it'll be proximity.
Hell,
just stay there for a little while. Grow a couple inches.
I'm now wondering how tall you are, because you probably have the same problem here in Australia, because it's very similar. Everyone's like 6 foot, so yeah.
5'9", yeah. So
you'd be all right.
Yeah.
Level Cap, I had one more question about the FPS conversation we were talking about, then we can shift. back when I first started the shooters, for me, it was Halo was my main thing. But like the popular shooters at the time were like, you could kind of jump between Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, and Battlefield for like your real sort of deathmatch kind of shooters, World War One, World War Two. Medal of Honor definitely faded off, but Battlefield and Halo always stuck around, or Battlefield and Call of Duty, with I feel like Call of Duty doing better. Do you see any other big AAA competitors in that space starting to come up?
I don't think there's ever going to be another AAA competitor in the casual competitive FPS space that is not a Battle Royale thing, because I just don't see that space taking off like Battle Royales have unless you kind of reinvent what that space is. So, like, it's kind of like the arena shooter died off to tactical shooters, right?
Yeah.
Tactical shooters are dying off to Royale shooters now, where whether it's Extraction Royale or Battle Royale or whatever version of a Royale type concept. So I think the next big thing that competes in that space is either going to be a totally new concept game mode, or it's going to kind of reinvent that, because you can't make a better Battlefield. Even if you made Battlefield and it's slightly better than Battlefield, I just don't think the market is like,
yeah, the time
eager
is coming
for that
on.
Game right now. It's like even with Theaters of War, if Theaters of War came out and it was everything we wanted it to be, I don't know if that would be enough in the current space.
Right.
I hate to say it, because right now the games need this crazy streaming potential. Classic COD and classic Battlefield are terrible stream games. Nobody watches them, unfortunately, because you just don't have this intensity factor. You don't have this win or lose factor. You just kind of have people bombing around, shooting and laughing at stuff, you know, which can be fine, but it's not big stream numbers. You know, everybody's watching the Royale stuff. And so, unfortunately, I think the success of games too now is really tied into the streaming world as well, you know,
which is annoying.
It's annoying, but
it's the worst way
it's
to judge
annoying,
a game.
But it really is an important factor nowadays. It drives sales like crazy. If you ever look at the indie devs or read a an interview with indie devs talking about how their game got picked up by a big streamer and then it just turned into like a multi-mega-million-dollar corporation in like a month, you know, because PewDiePie or somebody played their game and now the whole world's playing their game. It's like, it's unavoidable how much effect the like being able to watch your game and being entertained by it on Twitch affects how popular it's actually going to be, you know? So
you brought up a really good point there about Battle Royale, right? Versus the publishers there. Like, we were talking about games like Medal of Honor, that, again, that's another one I think EA killed. I used to play the shit out of that game when I was a kid, and they killed that. But what is interesting is Battle Royale started as a mod that turned into H1Z1, that moved into PUBG, that moved into Fortnite, and then it just steamrolled in all the others, right? So my biggest problem with publishers, and I'd like you guys both to speak to this, is publishers, for me, is they stifle innovation because they're money people that think they've got good ideas, but they don't really leave those ideas to the people that literally are the designers. So the other extreme of that is obviously Star Citizen, where the designer is literally running the show, but look at the game we're getting. We're getting this amazing game we've never seen before, but then by the same token, people say it's gone too far and there's too much feature creep. So I don't think there is a middle ground. How do you do a middle ground is my question.
Star Citizen's unique. Like, there's nothing else like it because it's got all this funding and no oversight, right? Like, there's just nothing else out there like that. And I don't know if there ever will be, or it'll be another decade before we have another project like Star Citizen potentially. I think the formula, the cycle is going to repeat itself forever. Indie devs are going to invent the new thing. It'll be PUBG or whatever will come out, and then everybody will copy that. All the big AAA studios will copy it, and then you'll get your Warzone, right? So that'll be the cycle. And there isn't really room for another Warzone right now. Like, they've got Apex, they've got Warzone, they've got PUBG, they've got every freaking version and every little modification of it now. It's all going to be done in the next 2 years or so. And then some indie dev is going to have to come up with the next big thing. And it's that they'll get their time in the spotlight if they do it right, you know, and then the big AAA devs are just going to do the safe route and recreate that formula with a twist and a shitload of funding behind it. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's going to jump onto that game because everybody loves the concept, the formula, and now they just want to see the high production value version of it, right?
The good graphics version. Gonna,
I don't see that cycle ending at any point because it's lucrative for the indie devs. It's lucrative for the AAA devs. It's just disappointing when big studios don't want to take big risks, you know, but I get it. They also are a giant studio. They can't be like, well, let's throw $500 million into a game. That didn't work. All right. We're out of business, guys. Like, I mean, they do have to play it safe to an extent, right?
How many times do you see somebody make a comment like, oh, imagine what a big company would have done with all this money and time that Star Citizen got? It's like, there's a reason that no big companies get that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every single time somebody says that, it's like, it is a different way of doing the game.
Yeah, if you want to see the big company version of Star Citizen, Starfield is it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Wait for that. Go play that. And that will be your version of big company Star Citizen, right?
Just where
it's not going to be what a lot of Star Citizen fans want, you know?
Just on the topic of money and stuff, we talked about PUBG. Now, last year, PUBG made $2.6 billion. That's $8 million a day. That totally dwarfs.
I think it makes more on its mobile yeah. thing now too.
But 500 million is peanuts.
In India and China. Yeah.
Absolute peanuts.
No, somebody quantified. Maybe it was one of your videos or somebody's videos that quantified the amount that Star Citizen is spending compared to like other major franchises, and what. Like GTA, Call of Duty, all those stuff, and they're like, yeah, Star Citizen's still like nowhere near like the budgets and like expense of some of these mega projects, you know.
Yeah, but you don't hear that from the media because there's problems with negative connotations against that. There's no negative connotations against CIG because they've only got one game and they're going to need people to help them get out there. But if you shit on say GTA 6. They won't let you review GTA 7 or whatever, you know what I mean?
But it's also, like, it's really easy with Star Citizen. I mean, they haven't put out a game themselves, right? Yep. They've missed just about every deadline they've set out for themselves. They've obviously had plenty of management problems. So it's like, even if you want to make the case that, hey, yes, obviously other companies might do something different with $500 million, there are so many things that people can bring up when it comes to Star Citizen, just muddy the waters of the argument that you never get to the actual point. They were not a company 10 years ago.
The most important thing is they weren't a company. They've been building a company and they didn't start with $500 million.
Right.
They started with way less and they've had to. It's not just feature creep that people constantly bring up feature creep, but it's basically resource creep. Is what they've had to deal with, right? Because you're like, okay, we've got $20 million to make a game. What does that plan look like? Okay, let's start working on that. Oh, crap, we have $40 million to make a game. Replan. We have to replan how to make a game with $40 million because it's got to be bigger than our $20 million game. Oh, shit, we have $100 million. I think we're going to need to like buy a new studio and like completely expand the vision. And just, it's been that concept in itself is so hard to like wrap your head around as a developer. It's like nobody's given them credit for like having to actually work through that. Like it's crazy.
Not collapse.
You mentioned staffing there as well. It's not like there's a respawn closet and you just open it and 1,000 developers walk out of it. That doesn't work. You know, those people have to be trained. They might already be at jobs. You know, how do you source them all? And again, they started
and
out with
like over 800 people now.
Those
people all had to be really good at their job too. Yeah,
they started
you can't just hire people.
8 in a garage, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things GTA 5 took 9 years, and that was 1,400 people from go to woe, right?
Yeah.
So again, that's if you're building it over time, you've got to. It takes more time. Sorry, Space.
That's why. Yeah. Besides the money that it'll bring in. And maybe the marketing that it will do, Squadron 42 coming out and being at least a decent game finally gives them a chance to be like, we've produced something. Mm-hmm. We released something and it works. And I feel like that takes away a huge amount of the more extreme criticism you throw at Star Citizen. Because then you can say, okay, yes, they've taken that a long amount of time. They've taken that amount of money. But look at how many people they've hired. Look at how that money spreads to salaries and upkeep and taxes and AWS and all that stuff, and they've made a game. So clearly they're doing something, and it's working.
I feel like the narrative has shifted a lot. I mean, from my perspective anyway, like it used to be nothing but, you know, vaporware comments, scam game, whatever. I still see plenty of it, and it's mostly just people who haven't really tuned in to the project.
So they don't realize you're getting scammed.
The reason we're all smirking. Yeah.
But the thing is it's changed a lot, like based on even just a few years ago. Like the tone has changed a lot. The people, you know, the Kotaku articles have changed a lot. Like it's not quite this, like, this will never happen. It's no, there's a game right now that people are actually playing daily and having fun in. Like there is a concept out there. You can play it and like your money isn't going into a black hole because the stuff that you can play is proof that they're like actually taking things to a level that nobody else has taken gaming to before. So that doesn't just happen. Yeah, when you're scamming people, right? So I think that whole idea is like, I think that that concept's kind of going away a little bit, and that there's definitely leftover people who haven't turned into like the news feed in the last couple of years, because it's been 10 years of reinforcing the scam concept, right? So that's a hard thing to break, but I think once a game ships, it'll be kind of like, it'll be done with, right?
You have to disclose that they've paid you to say that, though.
Yeah.
You have to,
negative reviews.
They did give me a javelin, actually. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, technically sponsored by Star Citizen Games.
Negative reviews get more clicks, though, I was going to say. And the other thing I was going to say is the reason we're all smirking at that point was because we were talking before the show about certain creators that are still perpetuating this negative stereotype.
I mean, I saw somebody
The negative news cycle is something that I find so unfortunate about YouTube and just the algorithm. It's not just YouTube, but social media algorithms. It's like my brother and I were talking the other day because, you know, I'll tune in and watch like a Dunkey video because they're funny and entertaining. But I remember how much he shit on that Hideo Kojima game. What was it?
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding. His video was nonstop shitting on it, like the worst game ever type thing. And then like later it comes out, he's like, I've been playing a lot of Death Stranding. And it's just like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I've never seen somebody shit on a game so hard and then like come back like, ah, this game's pretty good, you know? So it's like, it is this, it's like being the first to hate something, the first to make the most insane, like, I hate this or I love it. There's never like this, yeah, it's a pretty good game, you know, that doesn't sell.
Yeah.
It doesn't get views, you know, and it kind of sucks that the world's like that now. But
I can't speak for YouTube, but that is something I'm looking forward to seeing people doing all this backpedaling down the road. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's not even like you're not even going to get to see it because it's going to be, there's going to be just, it'll just be ignored. It'll just be, okay, sure, they were working on something.
We'll do compilation videos of he said it here in 2014 and now.
Oh, man, that's so much. But it's, I feel like the line between information or news and entertainment has blurred so much that, like, people will do what they can to keep people entertained on a video that they kind of pose as being a news or an update video. And then the people who are watching never really actually know fully what is a joke and what is not. So they just take it all as, you know, face value. Oh, that's how the game is. That's the people are like, you can't fly any of the ships in this game that you bought. And obviously that's not literally true. It's the true about some things, but people will take that as absolute truth.
The funny thing is though, every time these big blow ups, we get one every couple of years, one of them happens, the sales increase. So people will almost go, oh, I got to go check out this piece of garbage. And they go check it out and they're like, oh, this is not what I was told it was. And they stay and they, you know, buy a ship, but
so. Yeah, and that's really common even outside of Star Citizen is like as soon as a game starts trending because something bad was said about it and everybody else starts saying bad things and then you load up the game and you're like, this is actually pretty fun. I don't know what they're talking about. Oh, they didn't like this one aspect. Okay, fine. Yeah, I guess it's not that great, but everybody's been ragging on a game that's actually not too bad at all. And it's, I report on the news every week and there's so much like review bombing news. Like, oh, this game did this thing that somebody doesn't like or whatever. Now it's been like review bombed into oblivion, but the game itself is actually pretty good. You know,
what other weapons do we have to tell them though? You know, like that's the other thing. Yeah. Like, look at Star Citizen.
Money.
Yes, don't buy it. But Their other thing is there's just so limited games right now. See, at least with CIG, we can actually kind of, I know Sam Spectrum is not the best place to go, but you can go places and actually kind of vent your frustration. A lot of other game companies, you don't even know the game's coming out to 6 months before, you know, and then you end up with situations, I'm going to use Battlefield again, you know, because where the marketing team, they sold that game. They did their job 100%.
They did.
Right? But I've seen other games now. I don't know if you remember a game, Level Cap, called Evolve. Do you remember that back in the day?
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I remember that one.
That game was awesome. Really great game, but the marketing team stuffed that, right? They and obviously Turtle Rock Studios paid for that, and they're still kind of paying for it to this day. And that, you know, and I can tell you, it goes both ways, you know. I think there it is really important.
Well, it's like it's the No Man's Sky thing too.
Yeah,
right?
There's a communication between the two teams. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think the more known example is the No Man's Sky, right? Is like the marketing for what that game was going to be and then what it was at launch. And I that's a huge danger, right? Is like the discrepancy is, and I think, 2042 got hit hard with it because not only was the game subpar at launch, it wasn't as bad as all the reviewers were saying it was. It wasn't a good Battlefield game. It was one of the lesser ones for sure. But the marketing was so damn good by comparison, and the expectations were so high that having it launch as like not even as good as like the last game that came out, people were just like, well, worst game ever made, right? And it's like, no, it's still totally playable and you can hop in and have a generally decent experience in it. It's not like the crazy like 1 out of 10 reviews that people were giving it.
Yeah.
But it was just that it was because of the juxtaposition of the like hype versus reality, right? And so you gotta like slam it even harder because of that.
And in terms of that whole, I guess, the expectations that are set through marketing and whether a company is actually willing to meet those expectations comes back to how Star Citizen's being made. Like you were saying, they have the time to put out a game feature, test it with thousands of people, get tons of feedback on it, go back into it and be like, okay, we wanted to do this, doesn't work with the game, the gameplay is not fun, we can fix that and do that. And they can do that for every single thing that they launch. And I keep going back and forth with myself and asking, is that good? Because makes the game very, very fun, I hope, like you would think it would towards the end. But at the same time, that leads to a long amount of time working on everything. You know, the whole game doesn't need to be perfect. You can have like 5 bright spots and some stuff that's just not fun. But in this case, everything is made to order. And I'm not sure if that's the best option.
I think there's other things there too. Like you kind of think back, like if they had their time over again, would they change certain things? Like, would they use the CryEngine? Would they, you know, would they have easier time getting staff and stuff if they'd say used Unreal instead of, you know, but where we are is where we are at the moment. So there's no point crying over spilt milk, so to speak. So I think there's a few things there, but that's a can of worms. So I think I'll
the hardest one I have to the one that you're kind of like talk like your examples of problems with the development, and the one that I have a really hard time wrapping my head around is how it's just the combat, space combat. It's like Arena Commander was the template for figuring out how to make space combat fun, and that's been out since 2014. And we're waiting on a patch that's going to completely reinvent flight speeds, and we're waiting, we don't even have multiple types of weapons to use because everybody's just using like repeat, like there's no variety, there's no nuance, there's no balance, and that could have, we don't need server meshing to figure that out, we don't need all this crazy 10-year out technology that could have all been developed and iterated on, and even feeds into like what they would need for Squadron 42 to ship that project. I don't understand why space combat wasn't the number one priority for like, let's figure out how this works and how to get it fun with just like 3 core ships. We'll build out like a light fighter, a heavy fighter, and a multi-crew ship, and we'll just make them fight each other and make that really fun, and then build everything else out from that. And we're still like reinventing it and making new ships that we still don't know if they're even designed properly. It's like I keep wondering if tractor beams are those even, like, they have all these tractor beam spots for ships, but we don't know if those are going to be efficient or good or useful. So
the way I'd put it to you is it's a multiplayer game versus a single player game, and you know they're working on Squadron 42. So you tell me, you think back to all the games you've ever played, there is very big inherent differences between a multiplayer game and a single player game, yeah? As in, so you don't really need to balance a single player game to the same extravagance you need to do with a multiplayer game, right? So why, because they're working on Squadron 42, that's why we're not really seeing any movement on the multiplayer stuff, right? And so from the outside perspective, it looks like nothing's happening because they're doing all the single player stuff. And that's the problem. So you get all these content creators that are like, why are they doing this? It's because they don't have the people to do it.
To an extent, except that, so take, the thing is you're equating it to like an FPS game, I think, where I would equate it more to a flight sim game. So if you have a flying sim mission-based game that also does multiplayer stuff, which they do have tons of that, right? Like probably War Thunder you can run missions in and stuff. The balance between those two things is pretty similar. It's pretty on par. Flying has to work the same way in single player as it does in multiplayer. Sure, you're going to be fighting AI and they might do different stuff than a real player might do, but otherwise all the mechanics are basically built in and balanced and work the same and are good. So like I just it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, like single player is totally different than multiplayer. No, I mean, single player, you're going to be in a Gladius and you're going to have to fight other fighters, medium sized ships and big capital class ships. Why not just figure out what's fun in multiplayer and single player at the same time, you know, or even give me an AI scenario in Arena Commander, because they already have those, but they haven't even, we're still fighting fighters in those, you know. It's like, give us some like fun, like assault style missions. They could have used that as a tool for so many years now, and they haven't. And that's just what, because they keep redesigning stuff. And they keep designing more ships that are all going to have to get redesigned when they figure out what does and doesn't work, you know?
And I agree.
That should be figured out from the start.
I agree on paper, but the thing is, you can fake a lot of stuff in single player that you can't fake in multiplayer. So let me give an example. Why is there no armor in the game? Because essentially, and I'm not saying this is exactly how it is, right? But when you play a single player game, you can fake the armor. It can just become a part of the health pool. Right? And unless they're actually going to show you in multiplayer the armor falling off the ships or how much damage resistance that armor is doing, essentially it's just going to be a health bar for most people in a single player game. So that's probably why that's not in. So what I'm trying to say is they can fake a lot of stuff and get away with a lot of stuff and make it quicker than they have to balance everything for a single player, for a multiplayer in a single player game. And if you work that backwards, that might, if you've got less staff than a much bigger you know, studio like Grand Theft Auto or 2K or whatever, that you can fake it and basically just get it done. And I think that's where I think they're doing. I'm not saying that's exactly what they're doing, but I'm trying to look at it from my former background in games development and look at it that way and at least try and justify why they're doing it. I'm not telling you that's what they are doing. I'm just trying to give a devil's advocate perspective, right?
Totally get you. And I think I'm looking at it from I want to play Squadron 42, but I mostly want to play multiplayer, right? So I'm like, everything's sort of like multiplayer first for me. So I'm just like,
same here.
Okay, like we're 10 years in and we're still trying to figure out what a light fighter is and what a heavy fighter is and what, we have no idea what capital class ship combat's going to be like, other than vague descriptions, right?
See, so, like, these are the actual topics to talk about. People keep talking about, oh, there's so much money. Oh, you people are getting scammed. Nobody's actually talking about the fact that, like, combat isn't actually balanced. Nobody's getting into the actual
development problems
rather than just constantly looking at headlines about time and money. And going back to something that you said there, Level Cap, I think it was a really good point. It's like, we had Arena Commander this whole time, and now we're finally getting the combat system into a more finalized state, and it's coming from Squadron. It's not even coming from Arena Commander testing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Since 2014. And remember there were I remember like an old demo where they were showing off like a potential mission where the Redeemer like was gonna bring in, that's back when it was like a dropship design or whatever. Marines to like to like a base, and then you're gonna have this FPS thing and like all that, and it all sounded great.
You know?
It seems like really good ideas for testing out gameplay, right? Like let's see if it works in this small confined environment and figure out what is fun and iterate upon it. And it does, I know they have been doing that to a certain extent with flight models and stuff, but I mean it's not a major focus. It wasn't a major focus anyway, because we would have had it. They should have figured it out in a year or two, like what is the ultimate space combat experience, like.
But we don't help ourselves.
But yeah.
We don't help ourselves either. Look what happened with what was it? Hover mode. You know, the sky is falling and, you know,
it's garbage.
And it's garbage. And so they just retract it and don't talk about it with us anymore. You know, so
it's true.
They did.
It's true. And the new flight model is totally in-house.
Yep.
And
they're
going to push it and you guys are going to like it. And
I think
we're not sitting around.
I think specifically with hover mode, people really missed that they did come out and talk to us about it. And they told us what was wrong with it and what they want to do to fix it. But for some reason, that information is not permeated. I've said it so many times that they've decided to fall back to the heat system for VTOL flight. But it's not, I don't know. It doesn't catch on.
People just hear what they want to hear. And I find a lot of the complaints come from, a loud minority rather than a silent majority. I think a lot of us sit there and we're quite happy for them to let them make the game, but there's just this really loud minority that think that they know better than CIG. And in every instance where I've seen that happen, and I remember the very first time it happened, years and years ago, they were showing concept art every single day. It was amazing, just landscapes, everything, creatures, everything. And then they brought out this screenshot of the cockpit of the Freelancer, and basically people complained that it had too many struts on it. It's one of those strut things again. And they spent 2.5 days redoing it, but before they did it, they said, this is not going to work, but we'll do it anyway. They spent 2.5 days doing it, and it came up and the community said, oh yeah, you're right, it doesn't work. And they instantly, from then on, have been shutting and shutting and shutting things down. Because every time they've come out with something, we've shown that we don't have the knowledge to accept what they're telling us.
I don't envy the devs having to deal with an open community. Even having to listen to me complain about why isn't the flight model ready. You know, like that's the thing I want the most, right? I want to get into space and have a really fine-tuned combat experience. And like, I just feel like I keep waiting on it, you know? Yeah.
So my feedback to
like that's my complaint, but I'm also gonna be happy to wait and see what happens with the game as well. I'm like invested in the project and just like it's like, yeah, if you could focus on one thing, that's what I would focus on. But it's not really like seems to be the major focus of development right now.
I think for most people, once Squadron 42 is out the door, the difference when they actually have more people available to work on the actual, Stasis and the PU, the multiplayer, that'll all come in barrel loads. And you know, them spinning up those new development studios in Manchester and Frankfurt.
Is that
going to
happen? Because they have the plans for the sequel games? So of those teams are just going
to
roll right
that.
Over into the sequel games, right?
So the people we have now will roll over into that stuff, but all the new people are hiring, the new teams they're spinning up, that's the multiplayer people. That's the Star Citizen people. So right now we've been getting, just the overflow, the tip of the iceberg for the multiplayer stuff. But as they'll keep working on the single player, but a whole new team is going to come in and work on the multiplayer stuff. They've just not had the funding and the money and the resources to do that. And once Squadron 42 gets out the door and they get this huge cash influx, they're going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm just happy that I think...
That sounds like a dream.
By the time Squadron's coming out, their engine will be doing better and less of their own like production flow and work will have to go into maintaining the engine and more of it can go into actually building the games.
Yeah, well, it's getting those tools fixed, isn't it? They're producing Squadron 42 right now, but look how many years it took to make those tools, and they got those tools out of the way. Now we're on that last pillar that we need for you know, Stasis and server meshing is probably the biggest pillar they've ever had to deal with. And that's why we're having this struggle where it's just 317, 372.1, and all the way through to 4, and how many other numbers are we going to get before we actually hit 18? But you get what I'm trying to say. Yeah. It's been a very weird year because it's a pillar, and it's the most essential thing for this game to function over a single-player game. And it is a new technology. I've seen it in other games, but not before it was announced with this. And you guys know how big this game is. I don't have to sell you two on it, but for a casual person on the outside looking in, they're just like, why is this taking so long? But it's because it's got so many moving parts and they're trying to do so many new things.
Yeah. And to change the tone a little bit from my complaining about everything to like the idea that these last pillars of tech really are, like, we call them pillars, but they're roadblocks essentially to us having fun in the universe that we're dreaming about, right? But once those roadblocks are kind of out of the way and this time is spent on refining, adding new stuff, and just building out the rest of the game world and like actually focusing on nuance as opposed to like giant chunks of tech just to see if we can get it working. I mean, that's exciting. Once the pipeline is flowing, you know, mm-hmm. the clogs are taken out of it and we're getting like content at a regular basis and working on the nuance stuff that we all love to babble about forever. Like, what careers do you want to do? Oh, how's the balance of whatever? What's your favorite shipping, hauling ship? Or like all of that stuff doesn't really matter at the moment just because of these giant roadblocks. But once we're past that, man, I mean, it sounds exciting.
Yeah. I'm tired of saying that. So I'm trying really hard not to say it anymore. Like, oh yeah, they're bringing this in and it's always been Pez and server meshing, but there's always been possible breakthroughs in that have always been not long in the distance in the future. So I'm just trying to avoid saying that, but I agree with you.
Years out, man.
Right now it is, I think for people who have been following this game for a while, we don't even realize we're not getting content. Like we're getting additions, we're getting introductions of features and tweaks and quality of life changes, but we're not getting like content in these updates. Not like you would see in a normal game that has its engine figured out. Mm-hmm. Things like entire areas with themes and types of missions and new NPCs that come with it. We're just not seeing that.
We do. Yeah. I don't want to. I want to give the devs some credit because like Siege of Orison came out. They added all these new derelict stuff.
But even those are the same things in new places, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the problem is like we don't have the tools. Like Siege of Orison, in my opinion, was a disaster because the AI were like, I think I called them lobotomized sloths in terms of their reaction times. You know, like they didn't do any. Yeah, you're like, okay, so I can like kill all these guys with a handgun and a blindfold on
with a knife.
Yeah, and you're like, it looks cool and all, but it plays like a game that is not finished or not even functioning, you know? So like it's like it's new content that is totally reliant on the core pillars of technology to even deliver a fun experience.
It's and just
I
not
kinda
fulfilling.
I got Yeah, I did like a big critique video on that because I saw so much positivity about the Siege of Orison. I'm like, what are you guys playing?
Star Citizen.
Why do you people were and it wasn't like, hey, good job, it looks great, because it did look very good. It was, the feedback was, I've never had so much fun in Star Citizen as I have had with like Siege of Orison. And I just see post after post after post saying that, and I'm like, what the. There's not a single gamer friend I know that would hop in here and enjoy this experience.
The bar is low.
It made me worry a lot. I was like, holy crap, if this is what people are excited about, and that's the feedback, like, no, I got to say something, man.
The bar is low.
I want it to be good.
I don't think that the game, I think, like you said, and like we were kind of getting at just now, the level of content we're getting right now is just so basic compared to what I at least expect from a game, from an MMO, even in terms of quests, in terms of areas, in terms of interactivity. Like, there are definitely signs of it in Star Citizen, but I think again, I'm not going to say in 2 years or something like that, because that's crap, but I think whenever this reaches mature level of development from the engine side of things, we're going to start to see a lot more meaningful content.
It's that dam wall bursting analogy. Like once they have Pez and serve meshing in place, it's all gonna. I guarantee it. I know how the realm works. Well, they can work out a lot of stuff locally, you see, but when you put it on a server, it changes it. So I guarantee you they've got a lot of stuff working in the background. They're building out the tools, so they've probably got a quest tool system that they're building out. They're working out the basic levels of quests. And you would have seen the stuff where they've been sewing the quests together, so you get randomly generated quests and stuff like that. So... I know it's all behind there. It's just what to extent that dam wall is. Is it 1 foot tall or is it 100 foot tall? You just don't know.
Yeah, I see. I think it's a beaver dam. I don't subscribe to the idea that it's all going to come entirely. Bursting through.
Yeah.
They themselves, I don't think they know because it's never been done before. They have, it's all theoretical to them. And like based on Chris's projections of when it would be in the game, you know, it's like clearly they don't know. He wasn't giving projections that he just came up with. He probably asked the team and they're like, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, like I think we can do it in this time frame. But I mean, like they don't know. It hasn't been done before.
Imagine.
And they described the first test as everything being on fire, you know. So
I'm
like,
just
okay.
Imagining that conversation. It's like Chris comes into the room and who is it? Rob Rindell, who was doing the test, I think, for Pez. Mm. Pez is like, yeah, I got it work. And Chris is like, cool, I can go into the PTU. Well, probably in the next couple of months, do you think in Q3? And he's just like, oh, you know, maybe we should be looking more end of year.
Quite like that. I don't think he's like that.
I think he's very excited to get stuff out.
I want to see the rest of that skit, by the way. I want you to dress up like Chris Roberts and do a pro video.
Cut my hands more.
Yeah.
I think he gets excited to announce things that are coming that probably other people who are working on those things might be more hesitant about. I think we've seen that in past Citizen Cons, and probably that was what happened with PES. But, you know, he's a developer himself, so he understands the background of it, and it's just a mixture of that realism and excitement, I guess.
One last thing I'd like to ask you, Level Cap, as someone who's now kind of maturing into the game, do you enjoy, I know Space has a series like this, but basically bringing new players into the game? So I noticed a couple of videos from you with your friend Matimo, if I've got that right. I probably butchered his name. I'm not good at pronouncing
it. Matimo, yeah.
Matimo. And he was... screaming like a banshee, to say the least. Do you enjoy bringing your mates in and seeing? Because for me, when I bring a new player in, it's like everything old is new again. The way they react to things. Is that something you're enjoying seeing when you're spending time with your mates?
It totally depends on the player, right? Like, Matimio is a good sport, but the video we made was also from like a 6 or 7 hour live stream of us playing together. And I think the first 45 minutes was just like fail city of just like nothing in the game working the right way. Mm-hmm. And like, I think when we finally started doing something that like was just, I was like, let's just run a basic mission so we can just do something and complete it. It was well over an hour into the stream. And he was just like, we could have been doing, I could have done nothing and we would have had the same level of progress on this stuff. You know, everything was just going wrong. Our first mission, we landed on the planet and the auto turrets tried to shoot my ship through the mountain where we landed, and it laser beamed Matimio on foot, took out his leg. He was limped. He was out of the mission. Then I had to go clear my crime stat. I had a level 4 crime stat.
Yep.
It takes longer to clear a level 4 crime stat than just going to prison and doing the time. Like, it's insane. And so we're just hours and hours, and I'm just like, no, it's better. It gets better. You know, so it's like, it depends on the player, what's happening, you know? Yeah. I don't like apologizing for the game or like, I think it's hard because depending on the person you bring in, if you bring in somebody who's like super into sci-fi and loves the concept, and they're probably more willing to give it some room, you know, to fail a bunch. But if you're bringing in a weathered gamer who's used to playing games that work, even a little, even when you say, hey, it's an alpha, it's not really gonna, things aren't finished. I mean, Star Citizen is an alpha, right? Like even in its current state, which is so much better than it was like a year ago, you know, we're like, oh, it's so much better now. We almost forget, I think, that its current state is so far below what the average gamer is expecting from a gameplay experience. So, I mean, it's like
you just said with Siege of Orson.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I wouldn't have brought anyone in. I was actually I was talking to another big YouTuber. I don't want to say this person's name because I don't know if they want this commentary out in the public. They hopped on to cover the Siege of Orson because they would hop on to Star Citizen from time to time to do a video on this. And they just thought it was the lamest, worst experience of their lives. And we're just like, I'm not going to make a video showing this. This is terrible. Like my content, I like to show myself having fun. And I just wasn't having fun at all because, let's be honest, the Siege of Orson was a freaking joke. In terms of actual gameplay, if you came in from any FPS background to Siege of Orson, you'd be like, this is the worst shooter experience I've ever played on every level. So, yeah.
I think one positive thing, like just listening to what you were talking about there with your mates, with the crime system, is that they, you know, you go to jail for a one star now. We complained and complained, and it's taking 2.5 years, but they're actually going to increase it in 318 apparently. So level 1 and 2 no longer sends you to jail.
Yeah.
Which is about time, because every new player
about
in the last,
damn time.
The last 2.5 years, they'll just clip a turret and it's off to jail. And I've met,
ridiculous.
Yeah, they'll log out and never ever play the game again. They just get so infuriated with it. That was a really
the law system in this game is embarrassing. Like it is.
Why did they implement it? Why did they? I like they need it in the long run, but why implement it before you're ready to fine tune it? You know, and that's the, they implemented it and you're like, well, this is horribly broken and terribly communicated and there's no good gameplay loop for it whatsoever. Mm. And they're like, yeah, we'll just leave it in forever now that we've invented it. And you're like, well, but it's a massive detractor to the entire experience.
Yeah, it's game stopping. You could get in the game for 15 minutes and then never be able to play again because you just did some stupid crime. And
Dude, I sometimes think about like, I don't know, Captain Burks or people who stream this game daily. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yep.
Like the amount of things that must happen regularly to Star Citizen streamers that just absolutely ruin their plans for the evening or whatever they're going to do. I'm just like, oh God, I can't even stream it
in
general, man. Yeah.
I can't even get it installed. So I've had to just do different things on my last two streams. Yeah.
Wait, you're not playing the game right now?
No, I haven't played it in over a week because the file, I don't know what the heck happened. I had to update and then it wasn't letting me log in. I was getting a certain error. So I had I was like, there's nothing else is working. I'll try reinstalling. And I've reinstalled it 3 times and it hasn't started working for me yet.
I know a fix of that after the show. I'll show you. I actually had the same problem.
I gotta install it first.
It's in your temporary files. There's a file there that you've got to erase. I'll show you later. Yeah.
All right.
It took me, I had to get Piggles to help me. And neither of us could figure it out, but between the two of us, it was actually quite a complicated thing. And I've actually put a fix up for it on Reddit. And there's a lot of other people.
So what you want to...
Yeah.
What you want to hear for a game already has a bad reputation.
All right, so I think we'll kind of wrap it up there because this is the longest episode we've ever done of these, and I keep saying that every time we do one of these because they get longer and longer. But we'll have to get you back another time, Level Cap, and talk to you a bit more.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Definitely had fun talking to you. Where can people send their complaints? I'm going to phrase it that way. But where can people get in contact with you? Where can they find you on YouTube? Or Twitch.
Yeah, it's youtube.com/levelcapgaming. I stream occasionally, Tuesdays usually, sometimes Thursdays. And it's mostly FPS content right now with a little bit of light Star Citizen coverage. And my Star Citizen content kind of fluctuates based on what's happening with the game. If there's nothing interesting happening, less content for me on the game. Mm-hmm. If something super cool is happening, you're probably going to be getting more Star Citizen content than you want. But so check me out on YouTube. That's pretty much my main spot.
Space, do you want to give us your details too while you're here, mate?
I'm part of the Info Runners channel, as you might have guessed. So you can always be here. Subscribe, smash the like button, do all that stuff. Tell your parents and your dog. But I also make YouTube videos on my own channel, Space Tomato, youtube.com/spacetomato, as well as youtube.com/spacetomato2. If you watch Star Citizen content, maybe you'll see one of those things pop up at some point. Give it a little click. Check it out. sometimes I make something that's pretty interesting. Other than that, though, I'm just streaming on YouTube and Twitch under the same name, and I'm spouting off nonsense on Twitter. That's getting into the peripherals, though. Mainly, it's just YouTube. So if you're interested, come check it out.
Yeah. I am, yeah, I'm especially liking your new Citizen Central podcast that you're doing on Twitch, too. So that's pretty good. I recommend people check that out if they like a big group discussion.
Check it out.
I think you were on one where you level as well recently.
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah. All right. Again, like, dislike, subscribe, Patreon, all that type of stuff. You know, I'm not good at self-promotion. do what Space said, basically. Yeah. With
Smash
that, thanks for joining us, Level Cap, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon. So he's been Level Cap.
My pleasure.
He's been Space Tomato. I've been Execute. We'll catch you in the next one.